know that?
Yeah, I've had many boats and sailboats, and I did a lot of sailing.
I had no idea you were a sailor.
Yes.
He has so much. I can't even go down his biography. Truthfully, usually I print out a biography and read it, but it's so long with you, Gary, that it would take half the show. Okay, so you've had on your TEDx viewings, you did some of the first TEDx. I think you did the first one here on Maui.
I did the first one on Maui, and I'm doing one next in a couple, in 10 days from now. I don't know, on the 14th of October in Sedona.
And some of your
That's
TEDx...
That's where I saw you. I went to that.
Did you see?
I did go to that, yeah.
And some of your TEDx talks have had, you've had millions of views.
I literally have. Now, that's really wonderful, isn't it? I'm really, that's wonderful because when I, you know, I like teaching and turning people on to the micro world. But to be able to get on a platform where over a million people can actually see the micro world that I'm talking about is just it's fabulous. So I'm really looking forward to this one in Sedona. It's going to be focusing on flowers through the microscope.
Well, we should back up for the people who may not know you. Where have you been, world? But you have created microphotography from microscopes that you created that are groundbreaking microscopes. You created them yourself.
Yes.
And you have books out about this. I love The Grains of Sand.
Thank you.
Which is also one of the websites you have.
Yes. My website is sandgrains.com.
And you did this beautiful book showing what these grains of sand, and no two alike, and it's interesting because you have grains of sand from the beaches here, from Haleakala, and from different places, and they're all, each one different.
And you know, Maui has got some fabulous grains of sand. There's probably, the Hawaiian Islands, for a small location, has more variation in grains of sand than any place in the world. It's absolutely amazing. Every beach is different.
Really?
From the green sand, olivine sand from the South Point, to the red sand beaches we have here, and the brown sand beaches, and the black sand beaches, and the ones that are filled with coral and lots of biological remnants of shells and teeth and bone and sea urchin spine and all that kind of stuff. The biological stuff, there's like micro shells that are spectacular. They're just little grains of sand that you can't see until you put this stuff under a microscope.
Have you ever been to Sedona and collected any of the red rock dust there and seen what's in that?
I didn't, but I will when I get there. But I think probably what most of that is, that used to be the floor of the ocean.
Yes.
And so it's like sandstone, basically. You know, so it's quartz crystal that has compacted a sediment over a period of time, and then it uplifted and became the desert.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all quartz crystal. And the red color is from iron in it that's oxidized.
Mm-hmm. And boy, is it amazing, the structures of those. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's fabulous.
Talk about artwork. I mean, every single one of those amazing structures of those mountains are so fabulous.
So
you have how many books out now?
So, well, I did two books on sand.
Mm-hmm.
The latest book on sand has my moon sand pictures that NASA, I had a NASA grant to look at moon sand, which is quite extraordinary and amazing. And I was just thinking the other day, NASA is now going back to bring out more information about the landings because of all these people who don't believe that we went to the moon.
Right.
Well, we did go to the moon. And the sand grain pictures that I've taken prove that we've gone to the moon because the sand from the moon is unlike any sand on Earth. I have taken pictures of sand at almost... And on the four corners of this earth.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just, the variations are amazing. But moon sand is completely different looking, completely different. And one of the characteristics of moon sand is there are lots of grains of sand with holes in the middle of it, like a hole drilled right in the middle. And they're caused by micrometeorite bombardment. Because what's happening on the moon, there's no atmosphere. So the micrometeorites, rather than burning up, they come in at 20,000 miles an hour, and they're really small, and they put holes right through the middle of a grain of sand, and they kind of melt all these little grains of sand together into a new grain of sand, and they're called ring agglutinates because they're all basically ring shape with a hole in the middle. So this is a well-known characteristic of moon sand, and it's proof that we did go to the moon.
Yay! Well, that's settled, folks. If you ever were one of those conspiracy theory persons, here's your proof.
Yeah, look at my website. You'll see. You'll never see sand like that on Earth. Not possible.
Is that on
sandgrains.com?
Sandgrains.com. Well, that's an amazing story. Amazing.
Yes.
Now, but you know, you also decided to branch out and get even into other things besides sand, and you're kind of the sand expert, you know, micro sand expert. But here you are now really looking at talking about flowers.
Well, flowers, you know, when I 12 years ago, I moved to Maui to retire, and that obviously did not go very well.
Because you taught for a while here too, right?
Well, I still teach at Kamehameha Schools. I'm a substitute teacher at Kamehameha Schools, and it's a great honor for me to do that, to be able to teach the keiki and get them interested in not only science, but the idea of lifelong learning. This is really important for students to learn. So that's one of my jobs here. It's sort of my kuleana is to really teach young people how to teach themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've done that. So I came to retire, and I'm now busier than I've ever been in my whole life. But so I got very, you know, I used to take pictures of really extraordinary things like how the immune system attacks cancer cells, how nerves and muscles hook up to one another and recognize each other and can make us move and do the things that we do. Things like brain cells and how they fit together and communicate. So those extraordinary things. And then when I retired and I moved to Maui, there were two things that I was really surrounded by, sand and flowers. So I started focusing on taking pictures of sand and flowers through my microscope, and I never ceased to be amazed and surprised at how beautiful every little thing is that I look at. It's quite extraordinary. Now, there was a lady named Georgia O'Keeffe.
I love Georgia O'Keeffe.
Started painting about the 1920s.
And you know she was here on Maui.
I did not know she was here.
She actually did a series about at least seven paintings. A friend of mine actually published a book by the woman who, when she was a teenager, this woman worked out at Hana, and she visited Hana, and this girl who was like 14 years old landed up going with her around the islands when she painted paintings of flowers, tropical flowers on Hana. She came up here and spent a night right up here up the street on one of it was a Main Street hotel, and she went up into Iao. And she painted a couple of paintings of Iao.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, she was one of the great American painters of mm-hmm. all time. And one of her quotes is, and I'm not going to say it exactly, but she would look at flowers and see how extraordinarily beautiful they were. But they were so small that people never had the time to look at them. And she thought if she can paint them really big, mm-hmm. people couldn't ignore them.
Uh-huh.
And that's
right up your alley.
Yeah. So I'm making them really, really, really big.
So it's a different way of, I mean, you know, it's very manageable if you take a grain of sand and put it in your microscope.
Yeah.
One of your many microscopes. How many microscopes do you own?
Well, I own a lot of microscopes, but literally how many? Yeah. I've got half a dozen microscopes, but I've developed I've developed five different types of 3D microscopes.
Wow!
And I have 20 patents for different kinds of 3D microscopes. So all my microscopes are 3D. I recognized early on when I was looking through the microscope. This is when I was an assistant professor at USC doing research on chick embryos. And what happens with embryos when they're young, they fold up and they make sort of the spinal cord and the eyes and the brain. And if that folding and fusion doesn't happen right, you get birth defects. So we were studying how different environmental factors can cause birth defects. And I couldn't get a good image of these chick embryos. You know, I had every microscope in the world available to me, and I realized that they just weren't making microscopes how they should in terms of the lighting. Because before I was a scientist, I was a photographer for 10 years before I became a scientist. And I realized in a microscope, all they do is they light it straight on, one light straight on. Well, a photographer would never light a scene like that. Photographer comes in from an angle and gets contrast and backlight and fill light and all kinds of different lighting to bring out the structures and what they're photographing. Well, it turns out I tried that on a microscope, and it just had a dramatically, significantly improved image in terms of contrast, resolution, depth of field, and it created 3D. So I kind of got hooked on the idea of 3D microscopes, and I've been doing that now for 25 years.
And it's all now it's being used all around. It was being used in medicine, they're all over,
different versions of my microscope. I started selling them in 1992. I had a company in Santa Monica. We were selling them there, making them there in Santa Monica and selling them. They're expensive microscopes, so they're for research and industry. They're not for education. Well, they are for education, but it's not like the price of a student microscope.
Yeah. So what is it like, the difference of a grain of sand on a microscope versus a flower is a whole different thing. You're going to have to create a new microscope for a flower.
Well, with the flower, what I had to do with the flower is I did both macroscopes and microscopes. So, you know, if you do photography, you can get a macro lens.
Yeah.
And the macro lens lets you get up to about 1-to-1 magnification, which means when you blow it up, it's like 10 or 20 times magnified.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted people to be able to see what the flower looks like if they looked at it really closely. And then take that exact same part of the flower and put it under the microscope and show people what it looks like to an insect that actually lives in that microscope.
Wow.
So it's kind of a bug's eye view of flowers.
Wow.
Right up, because an insect, their eye is right up against the structures, and they see it very differently. In fact, they see ultraviolet light, so they see colors we don't even see. A lot of times you look at a white flower or a yellow flower and it looks just all white or all yellow.
Yeah.
There's a whole design there in ultraviolet that birds and insects can see.
Oh, how amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, so it's beyond three-dimensional.
Yeah, it's multidimensional. And so I try and show flowers are all about sex. You know, it's all the birds and the bees. I mean, that's why they say the birds and the bees, because that's how flowers have sex. So they sort of, their whole evolution has been about looking good, smelling good, and attracting pollinators. This is like what it's all about, is to attract pollinators. And so it's all about sex, and it's just incredibly sensual looking in a microscope. It's amazing.
Now, when you look at a small, tiny, tiny, infinitesimally small portion of a flower, what are you seeing? I mean, your whole lifetime's been years and years studying grains of sand, which have these kind of different edges and kind of roughness and kind of pretty brilliant colors. So a flower, is it much softer and much different looking?
It's very, very different. And what happens, so let's say you're looking at, everybody here in Hawaii is familiar with the hibiscus flower, which is pretty outrageously unabashed with its stamen and pistil. It's in your face, compared to most flowers. Now, the stamen and the pistil are the sexual organs of the flower. Now, most flowers are hermaphrodites, so they have both stamen and pistil.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and the pistil, it is the very tip of the flower, or one of the tips of the flower, has called the stigma. That's the female part that receives the pollen. And then it goes down through the style, which is the whole stem of the flower, down into the ovary and the ovules. So that's all part of the pistil. The male part is these little filaments that come out of the stem, sort of the flower stem, and they end in something called an anther that then becomes a whole bunch of grains of pollen. So that's the male part. So pollen grains have two sperm cells in them. And the idea is the little bugs, the pollen is usually really sticky. So the bugs move around eating. And what they're eating, by the way, the reason they're there is because, first of all, it smells great and it looks great. But what they're being offered is nectar. The flower is making nectar for them. And these nectar things, you can see it. They look like you're in Willy Wonka land. I mean, they look like candy. They literally look like beautiful candy.
I can't see it now.
You have to see it through the microscope
to be able to see it. I'm so curious what this nectar that looks like beautiful candy is. I mean, it sounds so amazing.
So they're collecting the nectar and eating it, and meanwhile, the little grains of pollen are getting caught in their wings or their legs, and when they fly from flower to flower, if one of those grains of pollen lands on the end of the pistil, which is the stigma, and if it's the right species, and not the same actual plant, because plants have a way of not having sex with themselves. various complex ways. What will happen is that little grain of pollen will go all the way down the whole center, inside the center of that stem of the flower, all the way down to the ovary, where the ovules are, and it'll turn it into a seed. And that's what the whole story is about, is making the seed, which then the birds can eat and then poop out 20 miles in a distance, and the plant reestablish itself at a great distance, or next to, or wherever it reestablishes itself. So that's how seeds are made. That's how keiki are made.
So this is an amazing field, since you're kind of, obviously this is a whole new world you're dealing with here.
Yes.
And then how do you decide? I mean, you have a huge library of grains of sand.
Yes.
But you got to go and collect all these flowers now, right?
Well, see, that you make a good point. The sand was way easier to film because people could send it to you. It could sit on your shelf for 6 months and it'd still be fine to photograph. A flower deteriorates very, very quickly. You have to get it fresh and you have to cut it and photograph it right away. And so that makes it much more difficult. And so all the stuff I've done so far has been the flowers in my garden. So I want to do
a big garden.
I have a big garden, okay. But still, I want to do a book on flowers, but I realize I got to go outside of my garden to do this.
I think so.
I got to get some more flowers.
You need to go to a big place that's got a lovely group of flowers. Oh my gosh, what's the name of that place in Victoria that has that beautiful gardens?
Bouchard Gardens.
Have you been there?
Oh, I haven't, but that sounds fabulous.
Oh, you have to go to Bouchard Gardens and talk to them. They'd love to have you talk on the subject. They do special talks and
interesting.
Things.
Interesting.
It's so beautiful. I mean, amazing. But you think of all these gardens around the country and
well,
the
that's
world.
What
they
I
go
need
to England.
But I have to
London
bring my
loves
microscope.
Their...
I have to bring my microscope there. It's a big microscope.
How big is it?
Well, it's weighs 40 pounds, and
you'd have to do carry-on.
Yeah, I take it to shows all the time, so it's not impossible to do. Mm-hmm. But the thing about the sand and the flowers, one's this wonderfully beautiful jewels of inorganic minerals, and the other is this beautiful organic soft. Mm-hmm. They're like total
different,
opposites.
Totally different.
Totally opposites.
Totally different. Yeah. And it's going to be interesting seeing the book as you develop that book on it.
Yes, yes.
So do you have all the slides that you've done? And it's so beautiful because your slides are three-dimensional, right?
Well, I make them all 3D, but in the books you only see them in 2D.
But
so when I give talks,
they're
in 3D.
They're in 3D.
I give my talks in 3D.
So then do they have to have a 3D projector and setup for people to appreciate that?
There are several ways that I've developed being able to see 3D. So the best way is to have a special screen and digital projector and glasses. Then you see it like you see it in the theater in stereo 3D. Other ways that I've made it is you can see it without glasses, and you see it by virtue that it rotates. So a slow rotation of an object in space lets you see it in 3D. So let's say, for example, you had the little flower on a little rotating pedestal, only I do it digitally. The flower is actually just sitting flat, and I figured out a way to digitally make it look like the flower is 3D and rotating.
Interesting.
So that allows you to see 3D without the glasses.
Because it is a whole, I've seen your 3D presentations. You did one with Tom Vendetti.
Yes,
Because you had
exactly.
some sand from Tibet, and that was actually... You had Tibet before, but then the last time was Nepal.
That's right.
The Nepalese.
That's right.
From the sand ceremony, the Tibetan sand ceremony.
That was beautiful sand, by the way. Did you see how colorful that sand was? I was really surprised. These are the sand that is used in these Tibetan sand mandalas, these gigantic, beautiful, colorful sand mandalas. And I remember that my son, who's kind of a lay Buddhist, brought me sand from one of those mandalas, and I looked at it under the microscope, and they were all quartz crystal that had been dyed different colors. But the stuff that Tom Vendetti brought me was not that at all. It was these incredible minerals. It was these incredible bright colors that were mined from obviously very special places. So it was extremely impressive.
And those were those not, they had to be dyed, obviously.
No, those were not dyed.
They were not
these
dyed.
Were natural colors from mineral sources that they had found in Tibet.
Well, you know, it's so rich, really so rich in minerals in Tibet, and the Himalayas have amazing amount of. That's why a lot of the Chinese and people want to take have taken it over because of the mineral.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that those were not dyed. They were like really
interesting because it was very beautiful colors in that mandala.
Yeah, and there was a couple pictures in his movie that from my microscope that showed the grains of sand and how colorful they were.
Wow. So with this whole new world of flowers, you're calling it Florotica?
Florotica is exactly right. Florotica is the name of my talk.
You've got to do a song. No, I mean well, being a lyricist and a composer, I mean Florotica is begging to be either a name of a group idea. Or a song. You could go so far with Florotica, right? And only that, people may now start calling their children Florotica. It's such an amazing name. You might want to buy a boat and call it Florotica.
Well, that would be nice.
That's a lovely name.
That would be nice.
It's very
interesting. But having a boat in Maui is not easy, is it?
No.
There's no place to put a boat here.
No.
What a shame.
I know. Isn't it a shame?
Yeah, really.
Yeah, no.
You have to be in Honolulu to have a boat. That's the only place that you can put a boat on the Hawaiian Islands.
Are the slips awful?
Oh, yeah. Totally. Yeah, you can't get a boat anywhere.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, yeah.
So here you have this amazing adventure beginning. And how did you land up? Now I have to say, Kathy's friends with Andrea Smith.
Yes.
Oh, wonderful.
And so it's a small circle there. In fact, Kathy went on a trip to Egypt with Andrea.
Great.
And is going to do another trip to Egypt with Andrea in, I think,
April.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And these are Andrea Smith style smile. They're not your typical tourists to Egypt.
It must be interesting. And they've gone a lot, many times to Egypt.
Like 15, 20 times.
Yeah, and they must know everything that's happening. I mean, they got to really be clued in.
Yeah. Well, they have a guy on the ground.
Yeah, right.
Muhammad.
Right.
Mr. Muhammad.
Who does it first class, as you can imagine, if you know Andrea, right?
Yes, yes.
Now, you've been to Andrea's beautiful gallery in Sedona.
I have been.
It's fabulous. Beautiful.
She's a great artist. She is. Really good.
She is amazing.
Yeah.
And she keeps doing these amazing projects. And it's so funny because I didn't know you knew Andrea. And then you said you're going to Sedona. I said, oh, yeah, you have to think of Andrea. Said, yeah, I'm going to do the show. You're going to be present at the gallery, aren't you?
I'm going to have an opening on at the show on the TED Talk is all day on Saturday the 14th. And then on
October.
Mm-hmm. And on the 15th is I'll be at the gallery, at the Andrea Smith Gallery for the show.
And that's a Sunday, or what day is the 15th?
That's a Sunday, sorry. Mm-hmm. Sunday the 15th. Mm-hmm. And I will have about seven of my beautiful pictures of flowers through the microscope that will be printed on aluminum.
And they
should be quite beautiful.
Oh.
And they'll be for sale. So that'll be fun.
That's a whole thing I've been wanting to do because aluminum, it has that dimensional feel to it.
It does. It's very dimensional, and the colors are kind of embedded in the aluminum. And you got it's really a great look for photography. It's a wonderful.
How big are these pictures going to be?
These are they're all kind of odd sizes, but they're on average they're like 12 by 20 or 24 by 18. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. They're larger than 8 by 10. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, 16 by 20, that kind of size.
Now, to get that on the aluminum, maintain the colors accurately, how do you make sure that the colors don't get affected by the aluminum?
Well, I don't know that technology, but the people who do, who print these things, this technology has really come around. It's very, very archival. It lasts a long time.
It does.
The color is literally embedded in the aluminum, and the colors are vibrant and beautiful. So whatever they've done to figure this out, it only looks better, not worse. It's just great.
How did you pick the pictures you wanted to do?
That's not easy.
No, it isn't.
That's not easy. However, I was going for the most erotic.
Florotic.
I sense a theme here.
It's florotic. I think these flowers have seduced you, Gary.
For sure.
You're blushing.
He is.
So here you have these ones that speak to you, your children, your flowers that you've killed that speak to you.
Right. Well, flowers only last a little while.
I know. Anyway. I know. Yeah. It's true. it'd be interesting because now we all wear our leis, of course, here. We all love our flowers. And we're going to look at these flowers from a whole new perspective. Do you have plumeria? Did you look at plumeria?
I looked at plumeria, which is quite beautiful. And it's petals are filled with these little bits of what they're called trichomes. They're the things that smell good and that taste good for the bugs. And I think the most the one I've been most taken with has been the hibiscus.
Really?
Because there are so many I don't know how closely you've looked at hibiscus flowers in Hawaii, but there are a huge number of colors and shapes and designs of hibiscus flowers.
Yeah.
It's quite spectacular.
Do you have a favorite color?
There are so many great ones. You know, there's this wonderful white one that has a fragrance. It's indigenous one to Maui.
It's the red one. The red ones are
fabulous. Yeah. There are so many colors.
I'm sorry. It's the purple magenta. Seen that one, right?
Yes, absolutely.
They're
so, one's more beautiful than the other. So I've become really fascinated.
So some of these in aluminum are hibiscus?
Yes. There's a couple. There's probably two. There's certainly one, two. There's two that are hibiscus.
Mm-hmm.
One water hyacinth, which is quite beautiful, really very beautiful. I mean, they're all spectacular. I mean, the thing is this: if you look at just a little tiny flower that's like from a weed on the side of the road and put it in the microscope, it's spectacular.
That's, you know, and this is one thing I've always learned and appreciated from what you do, the work you do, of course, is that. And I think you say this in your book, The Magical of Everything, that in every, what's that quote that you use about how?
Well, what I do is I show people how extraordinary just ordinary things are.
Yeah.
This is the deal. We live in this world and we forget how extraordinary everything is.
Mm-hmm.
If you look closely, everything, just driving down this, you know, we drive down the same street every day. If we ever really looked, we'd see it's different every day and we see different things.
Mm-hmm.
But we put the blinders on too much, and we don't stop to smell the flower. I can't walk by a flower and not look at it. It's very weird.
It takes you a long time to get from point A to point B. But you know what? This is why I love to travel, because we do have this unfortunate numbing effect of taking for granted our environment. And when you go to someplace new, you have that new eyes, those beginner's eyes, and you see things. So, like, it's, oh, my gosh, this is the way I'd like to see everything all the time. Everything is so beautiful and so wonderful, right?
That's exactly so true. That is so true. And that's why my parents took me traveling. And I saw that right away. When you travel, your eyes are open. Everything's new.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, everything is actually always new, even though we're at the same place. But we just aren't keeping our eyes open and looking for the new.
You know, I think we're all in overload, though, too. It's really a shame because when we do get all this news, and most of it unfortunately bad, that we start getting our mind dumbed down and numbed down. We're dumbing and numbing our minds down because of this unfortunate media overload. So sometimes we just are actually going into retreat, you know. I hate to say comfortably numb, but numb to a degree where we don't see and experience that openness you get when you are going to a new place. You're much more open to that input. And
you're really open to it because everything is so new. Your eyes are just wide open every moment of the day. I mean, that's how we should be living. But it takes travel to get us into that state of mind.
For me, that works. That works. And it also helps when we travel, of course. You're an ambassador of sorts. When you go and do these talks, and you've been to, how many places have you visited in this last year, Gary?
A lot of places.
You went on that trip last year to Nepal.
Yes.
You were on that trip.
Well, no, I wasn't on the, I was trip to Cambodia.
That
was the year before. I was on the Cambodia
trip.
I wasn't on the Nepal trip.
You went to London.
This year I've been to London and New York and let's see, I'm going to Korea next month. I'm going to Sedona. I go to California a lot. I went to see the total solar eclipse in Oregon.
Which is supposed to be the best place to see it.
It was fabulous. We got so lucky with the weather. The day before was completely clouded over. The day after was completely clouded over. The day of the eclipse was as crystal clear as you could ever see a day. It was just...
Did you get some great pictures?
I didn't really take pictures of it.
You wanted to experience it.
I just wanted to experience it. It's my second eclipse. The first eclipse I went to was in Africa, Lake Lohengalini, in the middle of absolutely nowhere in Kenya in 1973. This is a long time ago. And I've been wanting to go to a total solar eclipse ever since. So this time I brought my son and my 12-year-old grandson and my former spouse, who I went to the total solar eclipse with in Africa. So it was really a fun sort of full circle trip.
How wonderful. And it was, how magical that
it
is.
It was completely magical.
You live a magical life.
I do.
You do. You really live really a magical
life. I really do. I'm very fortunate. And I think one of the things is I'm really curious about things. My level of curiosity is very high.
Yeah.
And I think that keeps me in the middle of things.
Well, you're an explorer of sorts, because you're exploring this other micro dimension of this world. Some people want to get bigger. You want to get smaller. And by right. going smaller, you get bigger.
Right. Yes, that's exactly.
You know, and you're doing this. I mean, there's still a lot more. How long is it going to take to gather enough flowers that you can actually do this book, do you think?
The book, I've got a lot of it written, the text part. But I'm lacking a diversity in the choice of flowers. So I have to either find a source of flowers here. Now, I know some of the flowers that look really interesting that I can get here are orchids. I've done most of the sort of flowers that grow in Haiku, which is where I live. But orchids, there's a lot of orchid plants there. Orchids are unbelievable looking through a microscope.
Are they?
The cells are they're on steroids. They're like
really?
Plump and beautiful and colorful. When you get right in, look at each individual cell, it's amazing. So I should do more orchids. But then what I have to do is what you just said earlier, is take my microscope to a botanical garden.
Yes, absolutely.
And set it up. And make a book and do a book.
Yeah.
That would be the way to do it.
And you know what? I bet those botanical gardens would love to have you come and visit.
That would really be the way to do it.
London has some amazing gardens.
Yes.
And of course, you know,
the Kew Garden is just phenomenal. Kew Garden in London is one of the oldest botanical gardens in the world.
They're very big in their flowers in London, aren't they?
They
sure love their
flowers.
They love their flowers. It's a whole thing. The way they do their flower shows and everything. My gosh, it's pretty amazing. They would love you there. And I bet they would love the Floratica idea of it, too.
Yes. I mean, that is what flowers are all about. I mean, it is embarrassing for me in a way, but that's it. That's
it
what
is.
It is.
And it's just such a lovely concept. And it's so interesting that you've kind of blossomed. You blossomed into this new adventure.
Yes.
And this new world. And it's going to make us appreciate. Of course, I love flowers.
Yes.
I'm just starting to grow a little. I'm not real good in growing them, but I do love flowers. How do roses look under a microscope?
I didn't get a spectacular shot of roses. I tried, and I don't have a really good shot of roses yet. I have to get a much larger variety of them and find something that's really good. Some of the larger flowers that we have here, like the big torch ginger, those kind of big flowers, there's not that much interesting microscopically. When you look at a smaller flower, you think, oh, there's nothing there, but there's all kinds of microscopic things going on.
Interesting.
So you have to find the right flower to see the microscope.
It would be interesting to see the difference of a desert flowers, how these desert flowers and blossoms and wildflowers.
Those would be fabulous, probably.
Yeah, and the wildflowers they have that would be awesome. And you go up to even to the Rockies and blossom time.
Yes.
The possibilities are endless. It's just so beautiful.
I have to come up with a really miniaturized version of my microscope. That would be, a lot better.
That would be a great invention,
yes,
Gary.
Yes.
I think you could easily carry with me. I think you could do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And think how wonderful that would be then,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And
absolutely.
You could just carry that and just anywhere you go, then travel.
It's that
like, let me go out and gather my flowers.
Exactly.
it would be just spectacular.
Yeah.
Well, I find it fascinating. Now, if people want to find out information about the TEDx talk, now I think it's sold out.
Well,
in Sedona,
in fact, there are a few tickets left.
Okay.
So I am going to, if any of you are listening from Sedona or planning to be in Sedona, get onto TEDxSedona.com, TEDxSedona.com, and you can purchase your tickets there. There are some still left, but it's selling out quickly, so I'd advise you to, if you're there, it's going to be a wonderful event. It'll really be fun.
It's
an all-day event.
And it's going to be where? We didn't say where.
It's at the
It's the auditorium down in Oak, off Oak Creek, somewhere in Oak
yeah,
Creek.
Yeah, what was
Village.
That called?
I don't
oh,
know
gee. Let me see.
Andrea would probably know.
To talk amongst yourself for a minute.
I always ask Andrea. You
know. They'll be here tomorrow.
I know.
They are?
Yeah, yes, Andrea coming. And Gary are coming for a 2-week vacation because their son lives here.
Excellent.
And he's a wonderful photographer. He's a wonderful artist as well.
He
does
is.
Beautiful Buddha, lovely mm-hmm. Buddha things. So we're going to find out that and let people know. But and I will be posting this. And so if you're listening on the Podbean and you have friends in Sedona, or if you want to go to Sedona, this is an amazing opportunity. Because very rarely does Gary talk in small venues. And, you know, usually it's fairly large venues. But this one is a pretty intimate setting compared to his usual talk. So your chance to see Dr. Gary Greenberg at...
Well, let me see. Here it's coming. Hold on.
Okay.
It's The Collective.
Yay.
It's called The Collective.
That's it. Yes, The Collective in Sedona.
And it's where did you say it was by? It was
Oak Creek Village.
Yeah, Oak Creek Village.
Yeah.
The Hilton Sedona.
Oh, we all know where
resort
that is.
At Bell Rock. It's right.
Oh, yeah.
It's right there.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
I stayed there. Kind of like condos in a way. You like this? Are you staying there?
They're putting me up in someone's house, so we'll see. So
okay.
It should be lovely.
So, and if people want to go online and purchase, you have your books you have already out for sale.
Yes, if you look at sandgrains.com, you can look at the images that I'm talking about. You look at some sand images and some flowers images.
My books are
for sale there, and I've got some bits of art for sale there as well.
And I have to say, these really do make good gift ideas because it's the kind of book you leave out on a coffee table. It's not the kind of book you put away because you literally can open it anywhere and it draws oohs and ohs. And if people come over to your house and want to see something, they're immediately going to look and go, wow, look at this one, look at that. And that, again, is that wonder you capture. And by doing this amazing micro photography, it's just brilliant. I mean, and
thank
it
you.
Is, it's awe-inspiring, which I just adore.
Thank you.
And of course, you're tied in with a lot of beautiful, wonderful new things as well.
Yeah.
And it's pretty, I think it's pretty exciting to follow your...
Well, thank you.
Because I never know what you're going to be up to next or where you're going or what you're doing. I don't know when the next TEDx talk is here, or even if the schedules allow you to.
I talked with Katie McMillan, who did the ones before, and she is now looking into a new TEDx, and it's going to be more for youngsters, which is going to be an interesting idea, I think.
Oh, it is an interesting idea.
Yeah.
Okay. And you have worked, and speaking of youngsters again, they're very lucky.
Yes.
At Kamehameha Schools.
Well, I'm lucky too to be there.
I know last time we were in the studio here, Kalani Pea here. And Kalani and someone else remembered you.
Yeah,
it was someone who remembered
one of my
you from
students from Kamehameha Schools.
Actually
yeah.
remembered from the work you do. So it's just I'm glad you didn't retire.
Yeah, I'm not that kind of I can't just sit and do nothing. I'm really lucky that I love to be creative. To me, that's what gives me my energy.
Yeah,
is being creative.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as I can do that, I'm in good shape.
Part of me also thinks that there's some synchronicity between what we see and that beauty that you capture here on Earth that kind of goes beyond the judgments that you get when you see the image that we think of ourselves in the typical body. When you see beyond that into that, I think that also goes into the whole cosmic reality. I think in the cosmos, this beauty, again, just by looking at the stars and the pictures NASA puts out,
exactly.
you see this amazing beauty recreated again and again
exactly.
with these pictures and what's being happening. Can you imagine
exactly.
if you could get some of the Voyager sand, or if you could get actually
yes.
didn't they get sand from Mars?
Well, with Mars, they haven't brought
they?
Anything back yet because that's going to be a one-way trip. They don't have enough rocket fuel to take off from Mars and come back here.
So none of that is none of the stellar.
The only things we have from Mars would be Mars meteorites. But they haven't been to Mars and brought anything back. But what you're saying really is about how beautiful nature is. I mean, I feel as though I'm sort of, all I'm doing is documenting nature.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I'm basically a landscape artist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the old days, people never traveled more than a few miles from where they lived. And the only way they'd see what the rest of the world looked like was these landscape artists that would do these fabulous landscapes at places nobody would ever get to.
And there aren't as many of those now, are there? Instead, it's photography.
So now I'm doing that because I live in a world, a micro world, that nobody can get to. Mm-hmm. So I'm like a landscape artist bringing back postcards from that world.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely true. Do you have strange dreams that are kind of micro dreams? Did your mind take you into places?
I don't think I've had any micro dreams. Interesting.
Have you had any Floratica dreams?
I was just going to say.
The language of the plants will start speaking to you. Better be dangerous.
Really, really.
Who was it? Luther Burbank? Who was the amazing plant doctor that did all that study?
Yes.
And the book was there was a book, The Secret Life of Plants, that started looking into this?
Yes, yes. I have not read that, but I know the book you mean, yes.
And it's supposed to be amazing. Yes. That was like 100
years
ago.
That was a long time. That was when I was in college or something like that.
Yeah,
that was
a long time ago. Looking at, again, that Secret Life of Plants is amazing.
Yes.
And when you start realizing, and more people are, a lot of the plants and herbs actually have the healing properties we need in this world to fix things.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
And I'm sure, you know, there's another whole world there for you, herbology and things that, you know, in the Amazon and things that are happening.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at an herb like basil or rosemary through a microscope, you literally see these droplets of oil that ooze out of the...
Really?
Oh, it's spectacular looking.
Wow.
You can see it right in front of your eyes. It's really beautiful.
So Sedona, you leave for in the next few days.
I'm leaving on the 11th, so I'll be there. I think it's the 4th. So I'll be, leave on the 12th. Yeah, so it's the 14th, Saturday the 14th, in Sedona at the Collective, and then the 15th
at Andrea's
Gallery,
and that's Tlacopaki.
Exactly
in Tlacopaki, a beautiful gallery there.
Exactly right.
Yeah, absolutely wonderful place. And then you're off to other unknowns.
Well, then
Korea.
I'm back to
what
LA.
Part of Korea?
Well, I'm going to go to Busan, Korea, which is in the south tip of Korea. And I wish I knew more about the Second World War history, about the Korean War history, but I think that's where the Americans landed.
It sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And it's an ocean town on the south tip, and it's... East Asia Microscopy Conference, and I'm giving a keynote address about the value of three-dimensional microscopy for industry and research.
Amazing. Well, I love you, Dr. Gary Greenberg. I know grains of sand.
Sand grains.
Okay.
Sandgrains.com.
Sandgrains.com. You'll love it. It's a fascinating, beautiful site. And Kathy, if people have questions about what to do and where to go, the Paul Gauguin extra added discount cruises are coming up, and they've added a bunch for next year.
They did, up through May.
And so if you want, I know I'm going on the one October 28th with...
Wonderful.
To Tahiti with...
You are?
Oh, yeah, I'm going on that one.
On the sailing ship?
Yeah.
On the Windsong or whatever it's called?
No, on the Paul Gauguin.
On the Gauguin. Wonderful.
With Keola Beamer and
Tom
Vendetti and Cindy Shankin.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Excellent.
But you'd love to, if you haven't been on that one, you could get some great micro.
Excellent.
Tahiti. So thank you so much for the time and energy. We love you. And big aloha. Keep that aloha in your hearts, folks. It's needed. Call Kathy at 244-1414. Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you.
See you next time.
Mahalo.